Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Tuesday?
Tuesday. That's all it is.
Yep.
I'm about as fine as
Tuesday, lose day.
Not as fine as a pineapple. If you haven't heard the pineapple song, you should look it up. Anyways. Oh man, the Steelers. Yeah. I don't know. I'm okay. How are you?
Man,
I'm ready for the 4-day weekend. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's why I got into this line of work, buddy.
4-day weekend. I'll take it. We throw carpets all day long and then we get a 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
I'm sure other people get 4-day weekends, but whatever.
Yeah. Lots of people. Like the banking industry.
Hey, Mom. My mom's in the banking industry now.
Hey, there we go.
There we go.
So let's get into this news, man. There's a lot to cover.
Well, how are you?
Yes, I'm good.
Okay, just making sure.
Again, looking forward to a 4-day week.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Steelers stuff. Steelers news.
Yeah, actually, so we got some Steelers by the Lake news.
Right here. It's right there.
A couple new followers. On Podbean, Caitlin Crawford, and on Twitter, Megan Fiela. Megan, if you're listening, I need to know, are you related to John Fiela, the linebacker from the Steelers in the early 2000s, late 90s? Very important question. If so, we're going to want him on this podcast for an interview. I'm telling you right now.
Sure.
I want to listen. I want the insight of the man that played special teams so well for the Steelers.
Derek Watt? No, I'm just kidding. ahead of myself, though.
Before Derek Watt was John Fiela.
Yes, but thank you both for the follows on Podbean and Twitter, respectfully. Now, it is time to go to Steelers pregame news. Before the game...
Yes. So as always, they normally protect four players. They protected four again this week, with those four being Carl Joseph, Anthony Miller, the wide receiver Steven Sims, and offensive tackle Chaz Green.
Which Carl Joseph was brought up to the active roster as well as Sims, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't Sims brought up as well?
Sims was the week before, I think.
You're right. I'm thinking back too far. You're right. But Carl Joseph was obviously protected and then brought up to the active roster. With all that being said, defensive tackle Carlos Davis also returned to practice, which started his 21-day, potential window or window of potential to be able to join the 53-man roster again.
Come back from the IR, that's the goal. He's missed the entire season so far with an injury we didn't even know existed in the preseason. So it'd be really nice to get him back because it's getting real thin on that defensive line, that's for sure. We found out late Saturday night that Ben Roethlisberger cleared COVID protocols.
He just waited to get on that private jet. You know it. He's like, I don't want to ride with these guys right now.
Like, listen, I want that Rooney plane. I want the Rooney service. I want the peanuts, not just the little bite size container. I want the big, like,
you act like they don't get full-fledged meals.
The honey
on those
roasted
planes.
Peanuts, not the regular unsalted ones that nobody wants to eat.
So dramatic.
Like, yeah.
So dramatic. Kevin Dotson did get put to the IR, which was sad news for all people involved and all the fans, because Kevin Dotson was having himself a decent year.
You might even say he possibly was the best offensive lineman so far this year. I'd say between him and Trey Turner, they were the best two so far.
Yeah.
So that's rough when you're losing one of your two best, especially when some of the other guys just so young and not having great seasons thus far.
Yeah. And obviously we talked about Carl Joseph being elevated to the 53. That was due to Minkah Fitzpatrick getting COVID and then having to go through that whole procedure, which he should hopefully be out of in time for the next game.
Yeah, looks promising is what all signs are pointing towards him most likely being back for Pittsburgh this week against the Bengals, which is going to be a very important game. Two players got elevated to the 53-man roster that had absolutely nothing to do with COVID, one being defensive tackle Daniel Archibong, 6'6", 307-pound defensive lineman from the practice squad, and then also outside linebacker Delonte Scott, who was 6'5", 246, and that would be with TJ Watt being projected to miss the game due to his knee and hip injuries. Joe Hayden was ruled out, and Isaiah Loudermilk as well, which would be why you had that Daniel Archibong elevation there.
Yep. So Pittsburgh loses all their players, and the Chargers got back Joey Bosa. Yay.
Yeah.
That was about
yeah, and the middle linebacker, too. I didn't have that in the notes, but the middle linebacker came back like Saturday also.
Whatever.
Drew Tranquil, and he ended up playing pretty well.
Yeah. So obvious inactives before the game. You had TJ Watt, Joe Hayden, Dwayne Haskins, Buddy Johnson, Anthony McFarland, and Isaiah Loudermilk all inactive for the game. Most of those players I would have loved to have seen play. Actually, let me clarify. All of those players I would have liked to have seen play. not that I want to see Dwayne Haskins over Ben, but going back to that point, which, by the way, not to go back too far, but I do want to bring it up. We did have a comment on our YouTube video recently that we posted that my good friend Nick commented on. Nick Van Ord, if you're watching again, thank you very much. And now, of course, I can't find it. But Nick was basically, Nick was basically talking about our stance on Dwayne Haskins, and as much as he agrees in some aspect with me, he agrees in some aspect with you, but he basically said Dwayne Haskins is a bum and probably not going to go anywhere, but he doesn't think Mason Rudolph should ever play in the NFL again. So he kind of agreed with both of us to a degree, and I don't blame
him.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like we've seen great things from either one of them, so I can't really blame him for his opinions on this, that's for sure.
No, not at all.
So want to get into the game breakdown?
Let's get into the game breakdown. Obviously, always starting with quarterback Big Ben. Not the worst game, not the best game. I appreciated the fact that he went I've seen more long balls out of him in that game than I think I had previous all season.
Yeah.
It was pretty close. It was probably close to the same exact number.
And for the most part, most of them were pretty good, too. He had one that he badly underthrew Chase Claypool. The Chase caught it and then got tackled at, like, the 4 or 5 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough because you look at this and you say, Ben moved the ball better as far as, like, the middle of the field, had way more completed passes in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
266 yards would be one of his better performances yardage-wise on the year. 3 touchdowns is probably his best. I don't know that he's had any 3-touchdown games yet this year.
I highly doubt he has. If he has, it was week one against the Bills, but I don't think he did. I think that was...
They haven't scored that many points.
No.
You know, most of the games have been like 20 points or less. So, like,
That's already not 3 touchdowns.
That's it. And with Boz having, 21 field goals already on the year.
Yep.
Like, they're not getting in the end zone that much. And Ben did his part on that one. The only problem is when you look at where the errors were in the game, Ben underthrowing Chase Claypool on that ball. Pittsburgh ends up going for it on 4th down and not converting on the drive. They end up not scoring any points at all, and they lose by 3.
Yeah. However, this is the point. I didn't know when I was going to plug this in here, but it's going to be right the frick now. Offensive play calling was trash.
Oh, it was real bad.
The majority of this game, the offensive play calling was absolute garbage. And I think you had plays where Ben made something happen, or Najee even made something happen out of nothing. But literally, I was sitting at the bar watching at the Edinburgh Hotel Bar. Shout out to them. Great people. Great food. I called it right there. I was like, this is going to be a stupid tight end screen. The tight end flip screen is what I said or whatever. And that's exactly what they ran. Like, they're too predictable. And the plays they call don't work. I realized that play worked later. It was schemed differently for anyone who was watching. They were not the same play. They ran a tight end screen later on that got a touchdown. But... totally different scenario on 4th and 1 or 2. What I think it was 4th and 2. I could be wrong. You got to come up with a play that puts the ball past the line of scrimmage or give it to Najee with a fullback and an extra lineman at tight end. Like, there's so many other things we could have done to give ourselves a better chance. And I hated the play calling. If Matt Canada is still here after this year, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. I won't be. I'm going to be honest with you, and not because I think that Canada is doing a good job, just because they don't ever get rid of their coaches.
I know.
That's the problem. But the play calling, I couldn't agree more with you. When you start your drive at the 5-yard line, you know, run 4 plays, and none of them are a run play, and you start off again with the same formation I complained about a couple weeks ago. where you got two tight ends, a single running back, and then two wide receivers, and everybody's jammed up against the line. There's no separation, so your wide receivers are now being tasked with blocking people much larger than them, yep. much higher motivated because they know it's a run play, or you know, they're all coming. It's like, what are you doing? I hate that formation. Later on in the game, when they decided to actually run in a goal line situation, they brought in Zach Banner, tight ends, fullback.
And you scored on the play.
And you scored on the play. Holy cow. Not to mention, Joey Bosa was over on Banner's side. And if you noticed on the play, Bosa didn't even try because he knew he couldn't get through Banner. Banner was standing there with no one to block because no one challenged him because of how big he is. Sometimes it's just personnel. You put the right guys on the field and you just intimidate people. And that's what it,
don't like, be modest. It's a lot of the time. It's a lot of the time that it's personnel.
Yeah. Like you can't tell me that Ray McLeod should be there in the goal line situation over Zach Gentry ever. Like I will
unless
not be convinced
it's, unless it's first or second down. No.
And even then,
I understand your point, but I'm saying
if you're in goal line, do you want the 5'10" guy who doesn't even break a lot of tackles, but shakes people sometimes?
Not
but
near again, the offensive line. I don't.
And not to mention it's all condensed. You don't have room to shake people down there. It's a power game. It's either power or height. That's where you have an advantage in the goal line and short yardage situations.
Unless you run a quick slant. Yeah, but even those, a lot of the times, are...
And a slant in the goal line runs you right into the teeth of the defense because that's where everybody's at.
Yeah, ask Russell Wilson how he feels about that call. Ask Marshawn Lynch how he feels about that call.
Ask Antonio Brown how he felt about it when it was an interception in the end zone.
I know. A goal line, it's just tough. Anyways, moving on. I don't want to hang there too long.
We got to give Ben credit. He had a better game. He gave him a chance, and you know, right up until the end when the offensive line failed him, which we will get to, trust me. He kept them in the game. He kept them in the game and brought them back from a 17-point deficit, which actually allowed them to get in the lead.
Pittsburgh is now 0-231 when losing by 17 points in the fourth quarter.
That would have been the first time they ever won
after a 17-point deficit in the fourth. Wild. Yeah. Wild.
Dumb.
But moving on. Running backs, I never want to see Kalen Ballage in the lineup again. And Benny Snell didn't disappoint me. And Najee Harris did Najee Harris things. That's basically all I have to say.
And they didn't get a chance to really pursue the run game because of getting down so early and staying down. I mean, in the first half, I don't think there was a single punt. Each team had the ball three times. And that was it. Then it was halftime. Yep. It's just that they scored touchdowns on all their drives, and we had one touchdown, one field goal, one turnover on downs.
Yep. On the goal line again. To clarify.
Which
didn't lead to a safety on the other end. So, whatever.
Yeah.
So Najee, I thought Najee Harris played well. I'm not going to try to go over numbers specifically. But just going off of how he played, Najee again, at one point he was frustrated with Chase Claypool. Chase Claypool missed a block assignment and he got tackled almost on the line of scrimmage or behind the line. And Najee just got up and was like very visibly upset, just tossed the ball. And you got to feel bad because I think Najee Harris on 5 or 6 other teams right now would be leading the league in rushing.
Yeah.
Or at least close to it with Derrick Henry.
And you got to feel like at some point in time, and I get it, he's a rookie and he's big, but the ref's got to protect players at the end of plays.
Yep.
One time Najee was getting tackled and twisted to the ground, was the guy had him by the ankles, and another guy comes in and elbows him in the head.
Yep.
Like straight elbow to the freaking helmet. You know, they're looking at him like he might have a concussion. He ends up missing a couple series. And, you know, he gets so frustrated, he pushes one of the coaching staff members away from him. Like, this is, you got to protect players when they're in a defenseless position. And that was one time I was really upset with how the refs did not protect Najee Harris.
Yep.
You got to call that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know where you want to go from there. Fullbacks, tight ends. Well, fullback, Derek Watt did a great job on special teams. It was nice to see him in there on the run play for a touchdown, obviously.
Yep.
I don't know. Let's go tight ends. Unless you have more to say about Derek.
No. I mean, Derek's doing his thing, man. He's making plays on special teams. And when you actually use him on the offensive, he's productive. Yep. So that's more than can be said about some players right now.
Oh, we're not going to get into that.
No, we're going to get into it. That's the thing. I know. So let's go wide receivers, then tight ends. Okay. How do you feel about that?
That's fine.
All right, cool.
Chase Claypool had a lot of opportunities, I thought.
Yeah, and he made some long plays out of it. The 37-yard play was nice.
Yep.
Moved the chains a number of times. I want to see Chase get better at staying on his feet in contested catch situations. I feel like a lot of times he was in one-on-ones with shorter corners, and I'm talking like 5'10 type shorter corners, and there he is at 6'4". And it's a jump ball situation, and he's losing his footing and going to the ground. Meanwhile, the DB is fully extended and batting the ball away. Like, if he can stay on his feet in those situations and actually get elevated, he's going to win a lot of those jump balls.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to win a lot of them. It just gives me nightmares. It reminds me of Plaxico Burress. You know, Plax was 6'6" wide receiver, and everybody's like, oh, here he is, this great jump ball and red zone threat, except he was always falling when it was a jump ball situation. He never got in the air. So you couldn't really take advantage of his height because he was never on his feet to do it.
That's fair.
So I feel like they need to like get him on one of those balance things, you know, where it's an upside down circle and flat on the top.
Oh yeah.
And
have
him like start doing those drills, like shove him and try to get him to stay on his feet. Something to help him with his balance so that he can just actually be on his feet to jump when the ball comes instead of ending up trying to catch it while he's falling. Yeah. And then the defender has all the advantage in the world.
There's only one wide receiver that I liked trying to catch a ball while he's falling, and that was Lynn Swan. And I didn't even get to see it live. So,
oh yeah, man. Yeah. You were already gone. Yeah. He was long retired by the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well retired by the time I was born. Retired.
Yeah.
As far as other than Chase Claypool, wide receiver wise, We didn't see, I thought Deontay Johnson played well. I mean, he had a phenomenal game, I should say, to clarify.
Let's talk about the touchdown catch, man.
Touchdown catch was great.
Over the shoulder. I don't know how he even saw the ball coming, to be honest with you.
Was that the touchdown catch?
Yeah, the one in the corner of the left end zone.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, honestly, it was a beautiful throw. It was a fantastic catch. And yeah, that's the kind of thing that if you want to be considered a number one receiver in the NFL, and a lot of people are saying Deontay is the best receiver on the team, he's definitely making a case for it. That's the kind of catch that you're expected to make if you are going to be considered the number one wide receiver on a team.
Yep.
So I'm proud of him for making it. If he can continue with that kind of consistency and continue with getting in the end zone, because he hasn't had a lot of touchdowns on the year, continue getting in the end zone like that, then you're going to start getting some accolades come end of the year.
Yeah.
People are going to start talking about you for possible Pro Bowls.
It's going to sound weird to say this, but I want to see more breakaway speed from him. He had that one slant and just ran out of gas.
Well, and all year long, he keeps on catching these slants and going for like 30 or 40 yards, and then the defense catches him every time.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's faster than that, but for some crazy reason, he can't take those plays from 30 to 40 yards to finish him and getting in the end zone. And I feel like that's the kind of thing a number one receiver does, is he finishes those plays and gets in the end zone. And I feel like he can, he's just right now, he's not finishing those plays.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to agree with that. Ray didn't muff a punt.
Yay.
I don't know. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with Ray.
Basically exactly the same with what we got out of James Washington. They didn't use him much. He didn't give him much.
It's what happens. It's what happens when you don't scheme players. I think these guys would make really good plays deep down the field if you gave them opportunities, but we're not giving anyone else opportunities other than Claypool and Deontay.
And then too, like, James Washington is a good contested catch guy, but he's not a burner, so he doesn't get the separation. Nope. So if you're going to throw it to him deep, you're literally relying on him to either out jump or out-muscle somebody for the ball, because he's not going to outrun him.
which is, it's a good bet. I would bet on that half the time, or maybe even more. But again, this being the first game that I saw Ben throw over 15, 20 yards more than twice, that's saying a lot. And so hopefully they grow in their confidence with that, and they can allow they just got to start scheming guys open. They got to start running different play calls. They got to start running routes that's putting guys 10, 15, 20 yards down the field and allowing Ben to make the decision. I don't even want you to say, like, and I know that this is next to impossible to do, but every route or every play has, you know, A wide receiver, B wide receiver, C wide receiver, or tight end or running back, whatever. There's a first option, second option, third option. You can't, mm-hmm. but I want to go out there and have Ben just do the backyard football that he always does. Say, hey, you run this route. If you're open, I'm hitting you. And if you're not, like, having those almost natural A, B, C option than the ones that they call up in the plays. That's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong for thinking that. I don't know.
No. And I think it's a reasonable thing, because when you see him start doing the hurry up offense where it's a little bit more him and a little bit less scripted plays, you see the success from it. So he's very comfortable and very natural in that environment of just kind of drawing it up in the dirt. I feel like that's kind of when he thrives. So I don't disagree with you one bit there. A little more just, instead of just situational where, hey, there's only 3 minutes left in the game, let's go hurry up, just do it here and there.
We used to do it here and there, and it worked.
Yeah, on random drives, just go hurry up the whole friggin' drive.
We'll start getting some more touchdowns that way, I guarantee it.
Yeah, absolutely we will.
Tight ends? I don't know. Ebron caught the ball. Holy crap.
Yeah, and got in the end zone. Mm-hmm. That is a holy crap.
That is a big holy crap.
And Freiermuth gotten in the end zone too, so two of the three receiving touchdowns on the game were from our tight end room.
I'll take that.
Almost like we've been crying for it.
Yeah, almost like we were saying, hey, put the tight ends on the field. Pass it to them. They're red zone threats for a reason.
Those big, tall, strong dudes, give them the ball. Hey, good job, buddy.
It's like every time they go back to basic football, good things happen.
Yeah.
Like enough of these schemes, enough of these stupid end around plays. I get that we have the players for it, quote unquote. We don't have the blocking for it ever. And maybe we do once a game. I shouldn't say ever, but I don't think.
Yeah, here and there it works.
I don't think those one or two good plays are worth the seven or eight or nine bad plays we've seen run out of that. I don't think it's worth it. Stop it. Figure something else out.
Well, I feel like if you're going to do it, you have to do it off of plays that are successful. So you have to have, like, the run play, and then you have the fake off of it for the counter. You can't just have a random reverse that has nothing to do with a run play, especially if the run plays aren't successful.
Yep.
So, yeah, you got to scheme things better. Like that formation I keep complaining about in the goal line where they got everybody jammed together with two wide receivers. It's not a bad formation if you use some of the receivers, if you actually throw the ball out of that formation instead of running out of it. If you change some stuff up, but you have nothing successful out of it, so you can't even work any plays to feed off of each other because you don't have anything that's worked out of it.
Yeah, you can't run a play action when you haven't been running the ball successfully. It's not going to work. So, I don't know. But that's where I am with tight ends. Two tight ends, touchdowns, that's great. Ebron caught the ball. Freiermuth got the touchdown. I needed that for my fantasy team, just saying. Third place.
Third
place.
We're almost in the money.
We're almost to the playoffs. I'm excited. Offensive line.
Yes.
Holy crap. They were hot and cold, hot and cold, hot and cold, hot. And then they were
freezing.
Yeah. Hell froze over in the fourth quarter in the last drive.
Zero. Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah. I felt like Okorafor had a decent game. Same with Trey Turner. But basically, like, center over was not great. J.C. Hassenhauer got hurt in the first quarter, and then Joe Hag played the rest of the way at left guard. I felt like Dan Moore didn't get beat as often as he normally does in a game.
Yeah, he still got beat, just not as often. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I feel like he did a little bit better job than he has been doing. But on the very final drive of the game, when it mattered the most, they got creative. The Chargers got real creative, and they put both Nwosu and Bosa on the same side. So they're two best speed rushers lined up opposite the left guard and the left tackle, and just was not something that Hag and Moore could figure out. They just got smoked on
twice
on both plays back to back. When you get sacked on first and second down and you have third and 29 in some 10-yard line with like a minute and a half left in the game or less, like, that's just a recipe for disaster. So
yeah, go ahead and say that again real quick. Say the whole thing again real quick. I want to hear it again.
When you get sacked on first down and second down.
Yep.
And you have third and 29.
Yep.
Inside your own 10-yard line with less than a minute and a half to play in the entire game. You've put yourself in a position to fail.
Yeah.
And then just it's like the final kick to the nuts when it's fourth down and quite likely the last play. And you go for a hook and ladder, and you can't even complete the pass.
Nope.
Like, I don't even get a chance to see him pitch the ball a bunch of times and try to do some fun stuff because you can't even complete the pass.
And that to me is the problem with how little we've been going deep. At one point, we had deep threats. We were using deep threats, and when people went deep, the defense had to account for it. Right now, the defense doesn't have to really account for anything because we don't successfully complete long passes. You get to a third and 29, just play the short passes, and that's what they're going to do.
That's it. They don't even try for like a 15-yarder to try to give them a chance to convert the last bit of it. It's going to be a dump off. It won't be more than 5 yards down the field.
It's horrible. It's hard to watch as a football fan, as someone who enjoys – I think everyone enjoys big plays. I don't think there's anyone out there that is like, oh, I like to watch dink and dunks. They're fun. They're cute. I like them. I don't think there's anyone like that. And if there is, and that's you, I apologize. You can yell at me later for it. But seriously, Pittsburgh's got to get more creative. I messaged James in the middle of this, and I said, I'm officially done. Like, I'm officially done not rooting for this team, but having any faith in them. It's bad. And that's just to say, unless they do something drastically to change it. If they come out here and change their offense completely and run a different style offense and don't do these stupid play calls or schemes or formations, then maybe I'll have some faith in them again. But right now, this team's not going 500 this year with how I feel right now and how they're playing. Nope.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with you, man. I mean, I feel like there's hope because of the defense, because of people coming back, knowing that they went into the game missing five starters on defense, knowing there's a good chance three of them will be back this upcoming week against the Bengals, and then just holding out hope that maybe Stephon Tuitt decides to play this year. I don't know. Like, nobody's talking about that. Like, everyone's just up in the air with the same exact thing. No one knows anything. And if Pittsburgh does know something, they're not saying it.
Yeah.
So either this is like the worst nagging knee injury ever, or he's just like mentally not ready to come back to play after his brother's death, which is understandable.
Yeah. If that's what's going on.
Yeah. If that's what's going on, man, I get it. Like, that was the most random thing ever, getting run over by a car while trying to help somebody secure a mattress on top of a vehicle.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even like a drug deal gone bad or like, you know, somebody got shot or like, no, nothing. It was completely like, he's just helping someone secure a mattress to the top of a car because he's tall.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all he was doing. And he got run over and killed.
Crazy.
Like, dumb. Just dumb. So like, I get it. That's like the most senseless way for someone to die. I get it.
Yeah, it's just awkward. It's hard to deal with that, like, processing. Like, it's certain ways of death, cancer, COVID, this or that, whatever, you're like, okay, I can process this. But, like, that's just like, are you kidding me?
You can see rationale and how it happened.
Yeah. So if that's the reason, I understand it. If that's the reason, I get it. I don't blame him. You know, take a year off for mental health and everything else because it's a real thing. And come back and be ready to go. You know, that's just where I stand on that. We're already talking defensively right now. Let's go defensive side of the ball.
And let's stay with the defensive line. Let's talk about the best player on this defense with TJ Watt out. And that's Cam Hayward, and it's Cam Hayward by a mile.
Yeah.
Again, an excellent game from Cam. Would have had a sack in the game, but it was called back due to penalty. Imagine that. Got his hands up on a play and tipped the ball up in the air.
Didn't even get his hands up. Well, he got his hands up, but it hit him off the helmet.
Hit him right in the head. He did have his hands up.
He did. He used his head for that one.
<You're right>. Listen, he's a smart player. He's always using his head.
I like it. I like it.
And then on another play, Justin Herbert busts off a long scramble, and he shows incredible hustle and catches him 30 yards downfield. When everybody's missing tackles, everybody's out of the play.
Two guys are laying on the ground.
Herbert's like 5 yards away from getting in the end zone, and here's Cam running him down and tackling him. Great Got play. No business running him down. None.
If everyone on that defense had the drive and the passion that Cam Hayward had, we'd be undefeated right now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's almost a supernatural thing of Cam Hayward's just motivation, self-motivation, ability to self-motivate and get himself in a mentality or a mental state of, I don't care who's standing against me or who's in front of me. I'm going to get you. Like, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to be stronger than you, whatever. Sadly, that's, and I feel like that was a large portion of our 70s team. Like, offense and mentality. Defensively, the mentality, yeah. And we don't have it this year, and it's not close. And even Joe Schobert before the game mentioned something that it doesn't seem like practices or or maybe it was after the game. I don't remember.
No, yeah, you're right. Before the game, he did say something about he felt like maybe some people weren't practicing as hard as they should be.
Yep.
And he didn't make any names, and he didn't say offense or defense or special teams. He just said he felt like maybe some people weren't practicing hard enough.
And that comes down to those players, and it comes down to coaching. Coaches got to fix that. I'm just going to leave it there.
It can't be an acceptable thing for not... Yeah, it should not ever be an acceptable thing for someone to not be giving 100% in practice.
Unless they're specifically told not to.
Yeah, if they're injured coming off of an injury, they're a partial participant, whatever. But otherwise, man, they should be going all in practice, especially when you're not doing that well.
Yeah. Oh, and especially when they don't do full pads in regular season. There's no reason for you not to be giving 100%.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. So other defensive linemen from the game, Chris Wormley, again, didn't see anything as far as him getting after the quarterback or helping with the pressure there.
Bugs.
Tell me your opinion on Bugs.
Bugs had a good game in moments. In moments, okay. I saw flashes. In moments, I saw really good moments of him. And then here's the thing: the bad moments didn't outweigh it. Did outweigh it. I thought the bad moments outweighed his good performance. I didn't see him. There were too many plays where I saw him not getting involved in the play. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, yeah. When you got Cam Hayward hustling and tackling somebody 40 yards downfield, you better be involved on some of these run plays.
Yeah, there was one run play where he just got pushed to the, like he got beat and the hole went right on through his, not his gap, but near his gap. And once the guy went past him, it was like, oh, okay. I was like, what are you doing? Yeah, no, like if that ball comes out and you could have been there to fall on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at emotionally.
Yeah.
If you're watching this on YouTube, I can't sit still because I'm so frustrated right now.
so the whole defense, you know, you only had four normal healthy bodies going into the game. And we got nothing as far as contribution from Henry Mondo. So there's not even a stat line to talk about. I will say Daniel Archibong, the guy who was just brought up from the practice squad for the game, elevated for one game only.
Yep.
I felt like he represented himself pretty well and showed a ton of hustle. For a guy as big as he is, 6'6", 307, I felt like he moved really well. And I did appreciate his hustle after the ball. So, like, if somebody had a successful run going, he did turn and pursue and try to get involved. And in 8 plays, he had 2 assists. That's really good for a guy coming off the practice squad.
Very good.
You got plenty of games where you don't get that stat line out of Wormley or out of Bugs, and they're starting.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something in a kid like this. He probably won't even get a chance to play again the rest of the season, if we're going to be honest, especially if Carlos Davis comes back. But it's definitely somebody that I saw enough in one game that I'd like to see him in the preseason next year. I really hope they're able to bring him back next year. Because he wasn't on the team this year in the preseason.
Nope.
He didn't get a chance to play with us. But he fits the mold of what you're looking for in that defensive end slash defensive tackle, the way they use them. And there's a need for an infusion of youth in people with hustle and movement skills. Yeah. So maybe there's something there. Again, only 8 plays. That's all we saw out of him. But I did like the heart. I did like the hustle.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that. I don't think there's much more to say about defensive line. Linebackers, we saw, again, I'm going to go through this quick and then I'll let you say whatever you want to say about the linebackers, because I'm going inside linebackers specifically first.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen enough out of Devin Bush to make me feel like he was worth a first round pick. He had a splashy first year. But since then, I haven't seen anything that makes me excited about him being on the team at all. Joe Schobert, kind of the same deal. I'm annoyed that we traded for him. However, he had his best play as a Pittsburgh Steeler on fourth down against the run for all things. It wasn't even against the pass.
He shot the gap and tackled the guy behind the line of scrimmage.
It's like, great.
This is the one thing that we haven't really seen much of all year, other than I think we saw it once from Spillane.
Yep.
It's like we need these guys to shoot the gaps and hit the running backs behind the line of scrimmage and try to affect them that way. Don't wait for the linemen to come block you. Don't sit there and wait for them to come to you. Go get the running back before the lineman gets a chance to block you. If you're small, it's your only hope. And I feel like that's the problem is I remember seeing some pictures of Devin Bush when he was doing his training in the offseason, trying to come back from his ACL last year. And he looked like he was in fantastic shape. But I remember thinking, he looks a little bit smaller. And he was 234 pounds when he came out. If he actually got smaller by just like toning up and not bulking up, it would explain why he's getting pushed around so badly. But not that he's going to listen to this and take any notes from me, but I have a piece of advice on how to slow down a running back like Austin Ekeler when he's coming right at you and he's going out for a pass. Jam him. Put some hands on him. Don't let him go to his route freely. Go up and get him. Make contact. Push him backwards a little bit and at least put him off balance and get him going in the wrong direction or slow him down. If you do that, you take away all his momentum and then he can't just run right by you. Because Devin Bush is faster than pretty much 99% of the running backs in the league, but he didn't look faster than Austin Ekeler. And it's just because Ekeler had a running start and he knew where he was going and Bush was reacting and then going with him.
Yep.
You got to take it away. When the running back comes towards you as the middle linebacker, come up and get a couple hands on him, chuck him in his face and slow him down.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
I agree. Maybe don't chuck him in the face. That'll be illegal use of the hands. But I get what you're saying.
You get the idea.
I get the idea.
Put one hand in each jersey number and drive the man backwards.
Big facts. Big facts. Pull a blind side on him. Anyways, I thought I wasn't impressed with Devin Bush. I was slightly impressed on one play with Joe Schobert. Yeah. I thought Robert Spillane had the best performance out of all of our middle linebackers. And anytime he was in there, I was like, that's what we get out of Spillane.
Yeah.
I don't think he should be behind Joe Schobert, and I questionably don't think he should be behind Devin Bush. Devin Bush is obviously the better athlete as far as speed and everything goes, and probably even strength, but Robert Spillane's football IQ and his ability to make tackles in the open field and get behind the line of scrimmage to make it, like, it's, I don't know. I'm frustrated with our choice of starters.
And I would argue that I think that Spillane is stronger than Bush. I don't think Bush is stronger than Spillane. I don't think
he's definitely not faster, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Spillane's definitely not faster than Bush.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's as far as timed speed. But the way they're playing on the field right now, I'm not seeing a lot of on field difference as far as
speed. It's the IQ.
And I think you're right. It's just that Spillane is not waiting and processing and then reacting. He's just going. And that makes a huge difference. And I still hope that Bush can come back from this and show us a little bit of what we saw from him in the first season. Yeah. I feel like maybe he's just kind of second guessing things and it's kind of getting like a kicker who's starting to miss field goals, you know, game after game, it's compounding. He's getting the yips. He's losing confidence in himself. It's not like his abilities went away. The guy's incredibly talented and incredibly athletic. It's just, it's snowballing in the wrong direction on him. So I really hope that the coaching staff can kind of get him back under control with that. Like you said, fantastic play from Joe Schobert on that one play.
The one play.
But we do need more. We need consistency. We need these guys stuffing people behind the line. I mean, Najee Harris is getting hit behind the line of scrimmage, you know, 6-7 times a game. And it seems like the only time any of our linebackers are hitting the running back behind the line of scrimmage, it's the outside linebackers, not the inside linebackers.
Yep.
TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith are consistently doing that. And we're not really seeing that out of the middle linebackers. So got to get more out of them.
Yep. Outside linebackers, you were already going there. I thought Alex Highsmith had an okay game.
I think it was his best one of the season.
I guess you'll need to explain that to me.
I mean, he had a sack and a half. The rest of the season total, he had a sack and a half, and he had one called back, too.
That's fair.
So maybe I feel like he got more pressure in this game than he's had in most games and was really getting after the quarterback in a game where we absolutely had to have somebody not named Cam Hayward get after the quarterback. We didn't have TJ Watt. I feel like Alex Highsmith just kind of stepped right into the role as the lead pass rusher.
I think that's fair. I think I might have just blocked out that performance with how bad I thought our defense played as an overall.
And realistically, they did play bad. But there were some highlights from some of the better players. And honestly, in this game, I think, like, you obviously say Cam Hayward played a good game. And past that, Alex Highsmith had some very good moments in the game. And then you're going to really struggle.
Well, Cam Sutton had a pick. Other than that, he was trash.
Sorry. I feel like he was inches away multiple times.
Inches away doesn't win championships, James.
You're right. And that's what happens when your corners aren't even 6 feet tall and they're not fast either.
Yep. So you're telling me we're drafting a corner this year.
Just hopefully not another Artie Burns.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be bad.
The worst part about it is Cam Sutton's the best corner that they've drafted in the last like 15 years.
Yeah. And it's not, and he's not that great. And I don't
think that Cam Sutton is a bad corner. But he's playing at the level of a third-round corner.
Yep.
And I don't think it's going to magically turn into somebody that's going to get 4 or 5 picks a year. I don't really think that's in his skill set.
No, and I think with Joe Hayden out, he was obviously pushed into a more of a starter role. And I don't think that he's built for that either.
Yeah.
I don't think he can handle those one-on-ones with the best player on the opposite team. I don't think Cam Sutton's that guy. I think he's a solid support dude, solid support, supporting cast member, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. Solid number two.
Yeah. He's not the number one, which is what everyone's been saying about Juju for a while, which we'll get to know that maybe next year. We'll learn. We'll see what happens if he comes back and stays back. We'll see.
Or if he goes to another team.
Yeah, or if he goes to another team. Very true. We're on corners already.
Yeah, let's finish up the cornerback room. James Pierre, I didn't see him jumping out on film as doing anything incredibly positive.
Arthur Mollett.
So, yeah, Arthur Mollett at least didn't get smoked like he did in previous games. So that was a step in the right direction. And then we did see some Akilo Witherspoon in this game. And it was enough to see why they haven't been playing him.
Yep.
So I would not be surprised if he goes right back to that inactive list. In fact, I would prefer it. That one I feel like was a way worse trade than the Joe Schobert trade.
But to clarify, they're both bad. Nothing. They're both bad.
Yeah, but weren't they both fifth round picks?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And Akilah Witherspoon, you don't even want on the field.
Sometimes I don't want Joe Schobert on the field either, but that's beside the point.
But he's still going out there.
Fair enough.
So safeties.
Terrell Edmonds had one of the more physical games I think I've ever seen him play. He actually had some good hits this game, and I was very, very proud of him for that because I felt like a lot of the times he was doing these little arm tackle here, arm tackle there. I'm going to let you run past me here. Bad pursuit angle there. This was a better performance for him in that regard, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Terrell had a pretty good game. Trey Norwood was putting together a good game up until that last touchdown that was given up.
Yeah.
And it looks like it was probably on him. Cam Sutton was asked about it. And typically, if it's his fault, he'll jump right on the grenade and he'll say, hey, that was on me. He wouldn't give any information as to what went wrong on the play, which is a cardinal sign of a guy trying not to throw his teammates under the bus and being a good teammate, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just a tough situation for him. Trey took a bad angle and was never able to cut him off. And it's not like this was a 4-4-40 kind of guy. It wasn't.
Nope.
And he just got himself out of position and then wasn't fast enough to cut him off.
Yep.
And well, that's what it was. Honestly, with the rest of the game went pretty well for him, and that one play made me say, dang, man, I don't know if I want Matt for his starting safety.
No.
Because it was like, you should easily be able to cut this guy off and get him out of bounds.
Yeah.
And not only did he not cut him off, he got straight up outrun by a guy who's like mediocre speed.
That he did. Carl Joseph played a little bit.
Yep, kind of as a slot corner, almost more than a safety.
Yeah, I was very thrown off when they were playing that. I was like, why are you so up close to the line? Then I realized that there are two other safeties left field. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yep, so they're just kind of using him more as a slot corner, like a second slot corner, and those dime looks, I think, is where he got a lot of his work.
Yeah.
Kind of what we were seeing the role of Trey Norwood previous. So with Norwood taking on the free safety role, I think Carl Joseph kind of took on his role,
makes
sense. I felt like he didn't look out of place. But you know,
didn't he have one penalty or something? I thought he had a penalty or something.
Probably.
I could be wrong. I just remember seeing them talk about him and thought it was a penalty, but I don't remember.
Best play of any of the safeties would have to go to Mr. Killebrew, right?
Oh yeah, that blocked punt, baby. Almost recovered it for a touchdown. Almost.
Almost got the TD on it. But in a situation when you're down by 17, you really need the defense or the special teams to come up with a big play to help you out. And there it is. Killebrew with his second blocked punt of the year.
It's wonderful. Wish one would have came against his previous team in the Detroit Lions last week, but that's beside the point.
You know what? The kid's doing what he's got to do to try to help us win.
I like it.
And really making a difference in close games, too.
Did you see that special teams coach losing his mind over there?
Yeah, Dennis Smith was losing it, dude. He was absolutely losing it.
It's funny because... No, go ahead.
Yeah, the concept was cool, man. They sent three guys through the same hole.
Yep.
And he passed off the first one thinking somebody would pick him up, and nobody did.
That'll work. We'll take that.
Sure will.
It was funny because we talked about this before. Smith actually went to Edinburgh, the college that I'm from. And so watching it at the local bar when he was on the TV, everyone's like, oh, Edinburgh. And they were freaking out. It was really funny. It was just cool to see that happen and cool to see, you know, my local world mix in with the Steeler world. It was really cool. But other special teams. Boz for president, am I right?
Boz for president, man. There he is again, 3 for 3 on the game.
I'll take that every day. What and is twice he, like, on Sunday.
21, twice on Sundays, baby. I want to say he's like 21 of 22 on the year now.
I think you're right.
Yeah, there it is. 21 of 22 on the year.
We take those.
That's pretty incredible, man.
That's wonderfully incredible. I will take that consistency.
He's putting together... Yeah, he's putting together a real resume for a possible kicker of the year, getting on the Pro Bowl kind of thing.
I'll take it. We will.
He's got the resume right now for this year to beat out Justin Tucker. Tucker's got 2 missed field goals on the year.
Loser! Sorry, I had a moment.
I know. What a bum. He misses 2 field goals in a year.
Apparently, you know, Mr. Justin Tucker himself. Whatever.
So yeah, that's all the individual breakdown from the game, really.
Yeah.
Let's go into the post-game news. We talked a little bit about some of the injuries. Eric Ebron injured his knee in the game, was unable to return. J.C. Hasenauer had an injured pectoral muscle, was also unable to return to the game. So that really provoked a few moves after the game. So we had our regular protected list for this upcoming week. Going to be wide receiver Anthony Miller, wide receiver Steven Sims, and then two offensive linemen, tackle Chaz Green, and offensive guard slash center John LeGlue. John was on the practice squad last year and on the preseason this year. Got some extended look at center when they were trying to figure out who is going to be the center this year. So he's got some good versatility, and we'll see where that goes. But notable there with knowing that you're already down Kevin Dotson, and it looks as though maybe you might be down J.C. Hasenauer as well.
Yep.
Those are definitely going to be notable. What else went on this week, Cody?
Yeah, so Ray-Ray McCloud went down on the COVID list. He now has COVID, so don't expect him to make it back in time. I'd be shocked if he made it back in time.
I don't think there's enough time.
Not at all. With that being said, in reaction to that, to some degree, tight end Kevin Rader was signed to the 53-man roster, and Steelers also signed guard Rashard Coward. If you recognize that name, that's because he's played with us this preseason and was on the practice squad for some time. They also signed tight end Jace Sternberger. Now,
yeah,
you may not know that name. James and I know that name. James more than I do. But tight end from Texas A&M. Well, actually,
Texas A&M.
To
via Kansas, via another team.
Yeah, whatever. definitely more of a receiving tight end. So with Eric Ebron out, you assume kind of that role. Eric Ebron can't really block. Well, whatever. Sternberger had some decent stats in college. And was,
yeah.
Where did he go draft-wise? Did you see that? I don't remember.
The third round.
Third round.
This is a third round pick from the 2019 draft class. So he's only been in the league a couple of years. Had a suspension in the preseason this year on substance abuse, which I would assume was just him trying to bulk up some because he's a little bit on the smaller side and only 6'4", 250 pounds. I actually watched
you say
a lot
only
of him
6 foot
college.
Four. Sorry. He's still a big individual. Let's be real.
Yeah, as far as a normal human being, 6'4", 251 pounds is very large. As far as an NFL tight end, it's on the small side.
That's fair. I wish we could go back to having Mr. 6'8 himself.
You know, we do, Zach Gentry.
No, you know who I was actually talking about. don't be like that.
Christian Scotland Williams.
There it is.
So back to Jay Sternberger. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent because that year I was watching a lot of quarterback play, and I was watching specifically some Kellen Mond film from Texas A&M, watched a few games. And Jay Sternberger kept on popping because he kept on putting big games together.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up with that senior year almost 50 catches on the year, 850 yards receiving, and 10 touchdowns. And consistently, week after week, was averaging 15 to 20 yards per reception.
Yep.
The guy is a good move tight end. And I think really the reason that he probably has struggled in the NFL is just probably a lack of physicality, a lack of upper body strength, which I think he's attempting to correct, which is probably where his violation came in. But honestly, this is a tight end I was really high on coming out, and obviously teams in the NFL were too, or he would have never been picked in the third round.
Never.
And this is only 2 years later, so I really am optimistic about this. Knowing that we're not likely to retain Eric Ebron past this year, I don't think they want to anyway. You're looking for some answers in the tight end room. It's looking more and more like Pittsburgh might end up on the losing end of the whole compensatory formula due to players not playing or playing too much in other situations.
Yep.
So you need to be able to fill some of these roster spots without draft picks. And a guy like Jay Sternberger, you'd have at least another year, maybe even two, of control of him, where maybe he can fill out that number three tight end position. At least give Kevin Rader a run for his money, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this. This is a guy with some really good hands. And later on into his college career, we started seeing him break a lot of tackles, too. So some definite potential there with Jay Sternberger, and something that if Pittsburgh would have drafted him that year, I would have been really excited about it.
Yeah.
So
looking at the next game up, we have the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's run through this real quick. I don't even want to spend, I don't know. It's the Bengals. We play them twice a year. We know a lot. They're coming off of
win against the Raiders.
Yes, the Raiders. I was like, who did they just, because it was somebody we lost to. Yeah, I mean, they played well. Joe Burrow.
Yeah, Joe Burrow had a great game, right?
Great game.
Yeah, and on the year, he's got over 20 touchdowns, but he's also got 11 interceptions. So he does take chances. He does throw some questionable balls. It's something Pittsburgh needs to take advantage of.
Please.
Running back Joe Mixon putting together a real good year. So that's definitely a multi-purpose back. His backup, Samaje Perine, a very powerful guy. So you don't lose anything power-wise going from the number one to the number two there. Wide receiver room, Ja'Marr Chase is what everybody's talking about. And for good reason, he's already got like 850 yards on the season and like 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So got to pay a lot of attention. Hopefully Joe Hayden will be able to make it back. Even if Joe does, though, he's not the kind of guy that has the speed to hang with him. So we're going to need to cheat some safety help to whatever side Ja'Marr Chase is on. Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, the other starting wide receivers. You got some real speed with T. Higgins and some size with all three of these guys. So the wide receiver room, definitely a talented room. Tight end room, we got C.J. Uzomah and Drew Sample. C.J. Uzomah definitely hurt us in the first game.
Yep.
So they need to pay a little bit better attention to him in this second matchup. And then the offensive line, do you have that in front of you, Cody?
Yeah, Jonah Williams, Quentin Spain, Trey Hopkins, Hakeem Adeniji, and Riley Reiff. I don't believe any of these guys are out injured right now. Last I checked, I could be wrong. I might have missed something. But
I think Riley Reiff is out. Okay. I don't think he's been playing.
That might have been the one that I missed, which would then just mean Fred Johnson's in, and Fred Johnson came from us. He played for the Steelers and was a preseason player a few years ago before being sniped off of our practice squad by the Cincinnati Bengals. Anyways, this offensive line isn't a phenomenal one, but they're better than you know. They're like some players you're like, oh, I recognize that name. These guys aren't, but they're better than that. They play
and
better.
Honestly,
they play good together.
Completely stymied. Yeah, they completely stymied our pass rush first time around.
Yep.
So we got to do a better job of getting after Joe Burrow. If you pressure him, he will make mistakes. 11 interceptions in half a season is a lot of interceptions.
Yep.
Yeah, just got to make sure that you're scheming some stuff up. If you don't have the power to beat these guys, fine, scheme it up. But you got to be able to get after them, that's for sure. Defensive line, DJ Reader and Josh Tupou on the interior there. Also, Larry Ogunjobi. We know a lot about Larry Ogunjobi.
Know a lot.
Always been a pain in the butt for Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Good pass rusher from the interior there. The defensive ends, they've got Joseph Asai, who is injured, it looks like. Trey Hendrickson, who was a real pain in the butt first time we played him. And Sam Hubbard, also an accomplished pass rusher.
Yep.
Outside linebackers, you want to cover them?
So outside, I just have inside linebackers
I'm
here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Off-ball linebackers.
Off-ball linebackers, Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt. Logan Wilson being the better of the two, but Jermaine Pratt is no pushover. Both of them can be playmakers if you give them the opportunity to. Don't do that. And then you obviously have your corners, Chidobe Awuzie and Eli Apple. Eli Apple obviously being the high draft pick that played for the New York Giants for some time. And then obviously their nickel cornerback, Mike Hilton. You know that name for sure, who still very badly wants to sack Ben. So keep an eye on those cornerback blitzes. He almost got an opportunity in the first matchup, and then I think it was an offsides or something that stopped the play from happening. And then the safeties, Von Bell and Jesse Bates. Two very, very good safeties in their own right.
Yep, yeah, and Jesse a little bit more of the ball hawking safety, where Von Bell a little bit more of the hitting safety. Long snapper, Clark Harris.
Yay.
Field goal kicker, Evan McPherson, and punter, Kevin Huber.
Clap for them, clap for them. Okay, that's it. That's it. That rounds up the Bengals. Real quick, keys to success. You have your three?
Yeah, man.
You want me to go first? You go first.
Go ahead.
Okay. Keys to success. I'm just going to call it this way. Play calling. I think I might have done this once before as well. The play calling needs to be better. You need to scheme players into open spots on the field or scheme runs better. That way you can scheme play actions into the formula of a game plan later on and they can actually work. Second thing, we need to win the turnover battle. I know this is an easy one to say keys to success. Any team that wins the turnover battle typically wins the games, but we need to do this against the division rival. Again, like you said, Burrow's already thrown 11 interceptions. Why not make it 13 or 14? Listen, please at least make it 12. Please. And then the last one, key to success, is connect on those long balls. I want to see Ben. I'm happy with the one step forward of, hey, I threw more long balls. Now let's connect on them. I don't care who they're to. I don't care if it's Ray Ray. I don't care if it's Chase Claypool. I don't care if you freaking throw it 40 yards down the field to Pat Freiermuth. Please start connecting on these because it's going to get the defense to have to back off, which will then allow Najee Harris to have a lot more running room. And we haven't seen Najee break one yet.
Nope. We haven't. Biggest run of the season has been from Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. 26 yards. Woo.
Yeah. Not groundbreaking here.
All right. You're three.
So it's going to sound pretty similar to what I said last week.
Bring it on.
Weird, huh? Oh, so last week, my first key was to slow down and contain Austin Eckler. They refused to do it and gave up four touchdowns to Austin Eckler. Number one this week, number one priority needs to be Ja'Marr Chase, in my opinion. You need to know where he is. If he's going deep, you better send safety help because I do not believe our corners have the speed to hang with him, and that's all of them. There's not a single one fast enough to run with him. So make sure you're knowing where he is and giving help deep when needed. Number two, slow down the run game. And I'm saying the run game not because it's not just Joe Mixon. They do use a decent amount of Samaje Perine. These are tough, strong running backs, and the offensive line has some power to them as well. So extremely important that you slow the running game down to make them one-dimensional. And the reason I say that is because if you make them one-dimensional, you're feeding into my third key, my third one being pressure Joe Burrow.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Get me some sacks, buddy. You make this man react to pressure and he will make mistakes. He's made more than almost any quarterback in the NFL this year. There's no reason we can't make him make some more mistakes this Sunday. And if we do, those interception numbers will go up.
Yep, that they will. So again, we can't thank you guys enough for listening, watching, however you're getting this content. We thank you guys so much. Be sure to reach out to us on social media. We want to know how you guys heard from us or heard about us, where you found us first. Was it Instagram? Was it Facebook? Was it TikTok? Was it one of the posts that James shares to all those many Facebook groups? Let us know how you found us. We want to know. And we really want to just hear from our listeners and our fellow Steelers fans. We're all a family here. Even though sometimes we fight about things like should Mike Tomlin be fired or not, that's a whole Facebook mess right now.
It always is.
It always is. But anyways, again, we can't thank you guys enough for the continued support. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Steelers by the Lake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.